Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
For all things safety, Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Get more 92.9. Download the radio.com app now and make Memphis. It's 6 p.m. in Memphis, and it's time for The 6 on 92.9 FM ESPN with Giannotto and Jeffrey.
Ryan Hollins is, of course, a fixture on TV and radio, of course, talking about the NBA. Former 10-year NBA veteran. You can always follow him on Twitter, at the Ryan Hollins. Ryan, the Memphis Grizzlies have hired Taylor Jenkins, the former Bucks assistant, former as well as Hawks assistant, G League coach in the Spurs organization. He's had some front office experience as well. But we've been having this discussion on the show, and I'm curious to know your perspective from a player's perspective. Is it possible for a coaching staff and for a front office to be too nerdy from a player perspective?
All that matters to me from a player perspective is if I can relate to you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lose my mind how nerdy you are. If you're a genuine guy, if you really need something, if you got a plan in place, there's a culture created. That's what players want. It's the indecision, the lack of communication, and what really drives players crazy, and honestly just anybody crazy, is when you're told one thing and another thing goes out and happens and your word is not backed up. In this business, really in life, your word is all you got, guys.
So Ryan, initial impression when you heard the news a couple hours ago that Taylor Jenkins is going to be the Grizzlies coach, what did you think? What first came to mind?
I'm just hearing this now.
Oh, gotcha. Do you know him at all?
No, I don't have a relationship there. I never like to judge somebody until I see their work. Mm-hmm. And when you show me your product on the court, or I see what you're trying to build, now I'll judge you. Because, you know, I'm a guy that's been signed, been hired places, and the worst thing that happens is that judgment is placed. I always believe when you're hired, there's a clean slate. Is the best hire? No. Are we jumping for joy? No, guys. We're not going to pretend that we are. And there's a lot of question marks there. But I always believe in allowing someone to come out and prove themselves. Shoot, I played for Dave. I thought Dave was excellent. Jaeger was there. And, you know, he wasn't the sexiest hire. You've seen the success he had in Memphis, getting the team to the playoffs amongst all those injuries. You saw what he did in Sacramento this last year. So I don't think it's always about the names, man. And I'm never against getting some new blood in the coaching realm.
Let's put it this way. So if you see where the Grizzlies are at as an organization, kind of in a transitional period here, we don't know if Mike Conley's going to be back on the team. Clearly, they're going to be building around Jaren Jackson and presumably Ja Morant if they pick him with the number two pick. If you're a first-time head coach coming into this job, what would be your vision? How do you get this organization progressing in the right direction again? What would be some of the first things you'd maybe do if you were in this position?
For one, we're committed to winning, but as you try to win, You've got to focus on your rebuild and your development. So right now, the development of Jaren Jackson, the development of Ja Morant, let's just assume, guys, that Zion goes first, Ja goes second, because you want to move forward with Conley's contract, or maybe you draft somebody and trade the rights to Mike Conley with it. Who knows what the deal is? But if you're going young, you have to rebuild. And for me, rebuilding doesn't mean losing. It doesn't mean tanking. And we saw the New York Knicks were taught that lesson. A number of teams were taught the lesson. And to me, the teams that came out and competed and didn't just kind of commit to a rebuild were rewarded. The Lakers, they were a team that committed. Even, you know, I said the Knicks were penalized. The Pelicans through the AD saga, they get the number one pick. But that was a team that never quit on a season. So I don't believe that's the way. And I'm so happy the way that the lottery went this year. But you've got to teach these young guys how to play. and I'm going to take a page out of Brooklyn Nets' playbook. What did Brooklyn Nets do when they signed? What did Sean Marks do? He went out and got some veterans to place around those young guys so those guys could learn. Think about Jaren Jackson when he went to the game in Toronto. He had an interview. Who was the first person he went running over to see?
Mark.
Mark Gasol. Why? Because Mark taught this kid so much about the game. And I ran into Jaren at All-Star Weekend. The first thing I told him, I said, stay close to Mark. Watch the way he practices. Watch the way he works. The way he thinks the game. Learn everything you can from a kid. And he has done such that. But that's how those guys develop, is by seeing it. There's no greater coach than an actual player. And what I mean by that is no greater learning you're going to have or developing or translation of what you should be doing than a guy who's been there before and done it before.
10-year NBA veteran Ryan Hollins joining us here on the program. As always, go follow him on Twitter, at the Ryan Hollins. Ryan, in your experience, because you've played for a lot of teams, you saw the good with the bad. How much does the head coach, how much does he impact the winning and the losing versus more, you know, just versus the roster that he's given?
Well, let's make no mistake, guys. It's a players' league.
Yeah.
So when you grade coaches, I grade coaches on, do you get the most out of your players? Do you put them in positions to be successful? Because there's certain guys, and I'm not going to name names, you put them on the floor, they're going to get their numbers, bro. It doesn't matter who's coaching. It doesn't matter who's playing. They're getting 20 and 10. They're going to be who they are. But if you can develop the guys around them, or you take a guy's playing level or his talent to the next level, he fits into a system, that's where coaches earn their money. Look at Doc Rivers. The Clippers by far overachieved. Best years out of Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell. Look at Coach Budenholzer up in Milwaukee. Turn Giannis into an MVP. There's Brook Lopez shooting the ball like he's Dirk Nowitzki. Eric Bledsoe had a great year from shooting the ball outside. Middleton had a great year. He was an all-star. So you take your players and you get the most out of them. Is it going to be NBA Finals? Is it going to be the playoffs? I don't know what your expectations are, what this roster is going to be. But a coach's job, keep in mind it's a players' league, is to get the most out of your players.
With the Grizzlies next year, and as you mentioned, like let's make the presumption. The Grizzlies are going to take Morant. It seems at that point it makes it easier to go ahead and move Mike Conley. Let's say you get, you know, a youngish player, you know, someone that was maybe in the lottery the last 2 years. It's a little unproven, but a player that a team's willing to get rid of, and then perhaps a future pick. When you look at Morant with Jackson and what should the expectation be next year? Because we've seen rookie point guards struggle, and I mean, to me, like, you can make a reasonable expectation be, hey, if this team wins 25 games, that could be about what the win total would be. But if it looks right, that's not going to be an issue for you. What if it goes well? What should the expectation be?
Well, development and hats off. Like, this year was a wash. That's called a wash. Jaren got better.
Yeah.
The Jaren you saw early in the year was not the same Jaren at the end of the year. Successful year. Now I've got a core piece I can build around. And you're going to be asking the same questions for Ja Morant. Look, in a perfect world, this team is stacked, or at least decent. You'll say a formidable playoff team. And Ja can play with, alongside, or behind Mike Conley. That would be ideal for him learning. But ultimately, you've got to push in the cards and say, we are going to commit to a rebuild. Ja Morant is also a guy that you want to put the basketball in his hands. Yes, Mike Conley can play off the ball, but you're not going to get the most out of Mike Conley and his decision-making, his toughness, and the plays he can make if he is playing off of the basketball. So if you're Memphis, I think you fell into the perfect scenario where now you can move forward past Mike's contract and you can get something back in return and not be as hesitant. Because I tell you, that's a guy who in my mind, cannot be replaced. You will not get a guy with his toughness that fits and that'll go out and do the little things. And we even saw this year early in the season, guys, Mike Conley's good enough by himself. And even at certain points during the season, later in the season, to go out and win games. So I hope Mike gets in a situation where he can win in the NBA. We see, and we're so happy and just cheering for Mark every bucket he gets, every play that he makes. And he's been playing stellar these last two games. And you just hope that Mike falls into the same situation. But at the same time, you open up for Ja Morant.
Talking, of course, with Ryan Hollins. You can always follow him on Twitter, at the Ryan Hollins. All right, Ryan, I need you to kind of give us your thoughts. With Kevin Durant getting hurt last night, my first reaction was, first off, it's horrible. But my first reaction was, God, you hated to say it, but you're like, you could see this coming. Like, to me, the calf strain, whatnot, the fact that he didn't feel like he was good enough to go on Friday night. I just find it hard to believe that he was going to be good enough to go on Monday night. This is what I want to ask you. In terms of when to play through injuries, what are the parameters that team doctors say? Do they say, hey, you know, you can't injure it anymore if you do this? Like, walk us through what do they say? Because there seems to be a lot of, you know, confusion about what was told to him, what was told to the front office. When you've been in that position, what do they tell you?
Let me tell you guys one thing that I do know. There's no way God's green earth that Kevin Durant was clear to play, and there wasn't a disclaimer that he can pull his calf or his Achilles clearly straight off the bone.
Yeah.
There was no way that wasn't known. Secondly, I'll say, if I'm Kevin Durant, who's a dog, who's a hog, he's a guy who's going to show up. He is a warrior, and I'm not talking about Golden State. He's going to play in the NBA Finals. There aren't too many opportunities in your entire life that you're going to get a chance to be in the NBA Finals. I get the approach. Don't worry, guys. We'll live to fight another day. Maybe a playoff game. Maybe a regular season game. Maybe, heck, a training camp, guys. Go get your rest. But there aren't too many opportunities that you can participate in the NBA Finals. DeMarcus Cousins, by all means, should not be playing. He has given it everything he has. I don't think you guys understand. This guy should be doing months and months of rehab. He has no business on the floor. Guess what? This is a player's decision. Kevin Durant was fully aware of what was going on for him to go out and get on the floor. I know we saw the situation with the Pistons where Blake Griffin shouldn't have been on the floor. He forced his way on. Whatever was going on with that knee, it wasn't right. And I played with Blake. But here it is, guys. As a player, you got to go and get in the fold. These opportunities never come back. Maybe Kevin Durant isn't the same. But I tell you one thing. The NBA Finals is never promised, dude. It isn't. And if you're KD, my only complaint, my only criticism is that he didn't play his role. Sometimes when you're coming back into a game off of injury, and especially an injury like that, you just want to be on the floor. That's a success. That's a win. It was working. His presence alone made Klay wide open. It made Steph wide open. Those guys just played and moved better. Kevin Durant tried to go one-on-one. He tried to get in his back. He tried to be Kevin Durant. I am Kevin Durant. Well, guys, he was not Kevin Durant yet. And Kevin Durant, as a spot-up shooter, standing there, knocking down three-pointers, showing his range, is better than 75-80 and possibly 90% of the NBA right now. Heck, he drew the assignment of Kawhi Leonard. Job well done, KD. He did too much. And I think if he had just floated through the game, played well, they win the game by 10 or more so points just by him being on the floor.
Yeah, I think that was kind of my takeaway. It's like, oh, wow, he is going full tilt. Like, it's yep, all out.
But do we blame the Warriors a little bit,
yeah,
for the fact that, I mean, he played 12 of the first 14 minutes of the game. It wasn't, and they had no minutes restriction on him. I mean, I don't think that any one person is to blame for all this. Like, I know Bob Myers said in that press conference, you know, if you want to blame someone, blame me. But it just seemed like, I agree with you, Ryan, in that obviously it was the finals. Do you think, though, that the narrative that developed, even with those source stories that came out after game four about how, you know, some of the Warriors were wondering why he wasn't coming back, do you think that influenced this at all?
Man, listen, if you're KD and you're watching your brothers go through battles and fall down 3-1, and all you keep getting told and all you keep hearing, keep in mind KD is the guy who pays attention to the media, is that how badly you're needed and that you got to be back on the floor, you're going to want to be out there. You see Klay Thompson battling through injury, he wasn't right. You see Boogie Cousins, I can't even say half a leg, with no legs on the floor, guys, you want to be out there. Kevon Looney, essentially with a cage in chest. Kevon Looney gets hit again the wrong way. This dude could have a punctured lung or something. I mean, something crazy. That's a serious injury. I know it doesn't seem like that to the blind eye. If you're Kevin Durant, you're saying, why can't I be on the floor? KD obviously made a strong push to get on the floor. You had to be fighting this guy, Greg, and holding him back, especially in that game four. There was no way on God's green earth he was missing game five. I just believe, and we all agree, he was trying to do too much. And just Kevin Durant being there was going to be enough. So just by sitting back and watching, man, of course he fought his way out there. But like I said, looking at the rest of those guys, man, you had to be inspired. And his teammates did a good job of inspiring KD enough that he gave it a go. And unfortunately, it didn't work out.
So, obviously, the Warriors come out with this galvanizing win where they, you know, come back from the brink late with their backs against the wall. Klay and Steph are fantastic in the last few minutes. But then when you watched all them post-game, it was so somber, and they were so sort of, you know, obviously upset about what had happened to Kevin Durant. And you ordinarily, a win like this, you would think would push, you know, might tilt the series in a totally new direction from where it seemed to be headed. But how do you see this team, this Warriors team, being emotionally going into Game 6, given they you've got kind of two things pulling at them? You've got the sort of the excitement and exhilaration of that win in Game 5 with the sort of sadness that accompanies KD's injury. How do you think this team's going to be emotionally in Game 6?
I think they're finally back in the right place. Obviously, you hate to see that Kevin Durant's not in the equation. This is a team worried about everything but basketball. Guys, let's be honest. We haven't seen the Golden State Warriors yet, and we barely saw them in spurts last night. This is a team worried about their owner grabbing and cursing at players while on the floor. This is a team worried about injuries, who's playing, who's not. Right now, they know who they are. There's no more excuses to be had. Win or go home. And this is a team, when back against the wall, they're going to come out fighting and swinging. See, guys, all people in life, whenever you're against that wall, you got a choice. Fight or flight. You're going to hide and cower and take it, or you're going to come out swinging. All blows, all hands, kicking, punching. That's what the Warriors did. And you're going to see that, especially in Oracle. That's it. They're not dropping the game at Oracle, guys. There's no way. It's not possible. Draymond Green will go and fist fight Nick Nurse and Drake at the same time if he has to, and body slam Kawhi Leonard while he's at it. Listen, any means necessary. Their legacies, their reputations, heck, your name as a man goes down in this series. So, listen, the Warriors will be vindicated, and they are going to fight, and we're finally seeing a team that's focused on basketball, guys.
We're wrapping up here with Ryan Hollins on Giannotto and Jeffrey. I wanted to ask you about that because, Ryan, you're a reasonable guy. And in terms of what the minority owner did for the Warriors, was the punishment, the $500,000 fine, the year suspension, I guess you will, if you will, is that enough in your opinion?
I believe so. I don't know how much we blame it. We argue with a billionaire for, you know, just that's kind of like a, you know, us losing $100 or $200.
Yeah.
So it's not anything for him. And we're not going to make that mistake. Are we going to fine him $1 million, $2 million? I don't know what number is right. But what I do believe in is second chances. If I'm a player and I go and bop a fan or I go do something silly or crazy, I want a second chance at playing basketball. I believe this guy should have a second chance to be in the games. A year suspension, that's going to hurt the ego more than the pockets. So we will see if he comes back and does anything else silly again. I doubt it. I think the guy got wrapped in a moment. He was feeling himself. I do have frustrations as a player to say, man, what do these owners really think about us? But ultimately, I hope it was humbling and it never happens again. But I wouldn't mind seeing this guy at another NBA game, and I hope the lesson is learned.
And then last question for you. The scene when Kevin Durant got hurt last night, of course, there was some cheering. That's not some. There was a lot of cheering from the Toronto fan base. Immediately, the Raptors players, the Raptors PA system immediately shut it down. I wanted to ask you this. Does that feel like something that could have just happened anywhere in that moment, or do you think maybe the Toronto nice person reputation that city that fan base has earned was maybe overblown?
I believe it's a Toronto thing. I don't think I'm going to call them clowns.
Yeah.
These clowns don't know the game of basketball. Those clowns didn't know sportsmanship. Those clowns just think we are numbers and just a product and a service on the floor. They forget that's a darn person whose career, whose life just got changed. Okay, that's first and foremost. That's why the Warriors were angry. That's why they were frustrated. A couple questionable calls down the stretch. It almost seems like the whole world wants the Warriors to fail. These are hardworking guys who earned everything they could. And, heck, they're already a great team, and they went and signed a great player. Who wouldn't want it? I mean, heck, if the Lakers went out and signed Gary Payton, Malone with Kobe and Shaq, that's what you try to do. You try to be the best that you can be, and guess what? It happened to work out for the Warriors. So all the jealousy, all the frustration, it has to go. And it got to the point where they're almost happy. They literally had got so beside themselves that they were happy that he wasn't playing. And they weren't the only one. It wasn't just the cheers in the arena. There are a couple of people around the world going, yeah, I'm glad he's out. And the hate for KD has gone too far and frustrated that this man's career, his life is not going to be the same. And you have people cheering with it. So that's where it goes, okay, you guys might not like KD. Maybe he's a villain. But damn it, this is an everyday man like you and me. He bleeds the same blood. He same blood you bring. His blood is red. He breathes the same air. And you guys have just you've taken it way too far out of context.
Ryan, you're the best. We really appreciate your time, my man.
Thank you, Ryan.
Oh, man, you guys are amazing. Thanks for having me.
That is Ryan Hollins. Again, you can always follow him on Twitter at the Ryan Hollins.
So I want to react to that a little bit.
I was going to say there are a couple things there.
Yeah, no, there's a couple things there. And it, to Ryan's point about this was KD's decision, but I want to take people back. So I haven't known Kevin Durant for a long time, but I've known of him for a long time because I grew up in the D.C. area, and he was a couple years younger than me growing up there, a few years younger. And the story that came to mind last night when I saw him go down and I just heard the talk of him, you know, that source story after game four kind of bothered me.
Because, yes.
Like, who knows who the sources were or whatever, that he, you know, essentially the Warriors were questioning his desire to play. And the story I was reminded of, I grew up with this guy, Jerome Dyson, who played for UConn basketball and played on Kevin Durant's AAU team growing up. It was him, them two, Ty Lawson, and DeJuan Summers, who played at Georgetown. It was a pretty stacked AAU team, the D.C. Blue Devils. And I'll never forget hearing the story from one of my high school friends who went to University of Maryland about the time Jerome and Kevin Durant showed up at the University of Maryland Rec Center and essentially dominated the court for about 4 hours one day. And, like, that's how much that guy loves playing basketball. And you saw it with what he did during the NBA lockout when he was just showing up at different, you know, outdoor leagues around the country, whether it was D.C., L.A., New York, just showing up at Rucker Park, showing up at Berry Farm in D.C. That guy's still in there. I know he gets obscured by this sort of jaded persona that we see now from KD, but and we heard it from Michael Lee when he was on this show a couple weeks ago. Like, that guy who loves playing basketball is still there. And this is the point of what I'm saying, is that you cannot convince me that the Warriors did right by him here. And I don't think they did it intentionally necessarily, but I was watching Scott Van Pelt on SportsCenter, and he had Rachel Nichols on last night. And Rachel Nichols said something interesting to me in that she said, as she was in the locker room, like, Steve Kerr and all these Warriors officials were kept saying to themselves, and I think it's part of the reason why Bob Myers was crying, is they told us it couldn't get worse. They told us it couldn't get worse. Well, you cannot convince me that the injury last night was not related to the original injury. And given what we know about Kevin Durant and his just passion for the game, what Ryan said, just a player's natural desire of, this is the finals, I gotta play. Like, I think you cannot convince me the organization did right by him. I don't think they intentionally did wrong by him, but you can't convince me they did right by him. And I think Bob Myers knows it, and that's why he was crying during that press conference.
I think that's true. There are two things that I will say on this. All right, number one, I think one of the best followers out on Twitter is Pro Football Doc. It's David Chow. I believe he was with the Chargers. He's a tremendous follow. He is remarkably good at what he does. And for the record, he's very good at looking at video and saying, hey, here's what I think it is. And he had this to say afterwards, because keep in mind, he's the first person that right when the calf injury, the right calf strain occurred, he did like an eight tweet thread saying, okay, here's why I think it's an Achilles. I'm not saying that's not, but from the limited video that I've seen, here's why. And he laid it out. And he had this to say about whether or not it was irresponsible on the Warriors' behalf. Quote, often people say that it is the medical and the team's job to, quote, protect the players from himself. That is definitely true if there's a catastrophic or permanent injury involved. However, if the Warriors were waiting for a player to be 100% and have no risk, then Klay Thompson would be sitting out with a hamstring strain. Kevon Looney would have never played with his rib cartilage fracture. Steph Curry would still be out with ligament damage from his dislocated finger. DeMarcus Cousins would sit out with his quad and maybe residual Achilles injury. Andre Iguodala would miss due to multiple ailments and more. Same goes for the Raptors. Heck, if the medical staffs in the NFL, quote, protected, unquote, players from themselves and only allowed fully healthy players to suit up, the active roster would be 153 instead of 53 to field a team of 45. The key issue here is as long as the medical staff informed Durant and the team of the risk, the decision was not irresponsible. Based on Durant's social media post after the injury in support of the Warriors, there doesn't seem to be any regret, animosity, or hint that led him astray.
Like I said, I don't think they did wrong by him necessarily. They didn't do right by him.
It just comes down to this. I think back to this situation. First off, like, you can argue what the doctor said. I find it highly unlikely that they said there was no, like, I think.
Well, I'd also say I would hope and guess that they didn't, Durant and his people didn't just consult with the Grizzlies doctors.
Even the Warriors. Yes. No,
yeah, they're Warriors doctors.
Because this is the point that I would make. Oftentimes doctors disagree. And I'll tell you a story of when they disagreed. My brother was a college baseball pitcher and he was pitching in summer league out in North Carolina. And he was what you would see from a normal pitcher today. Fastball, hard slider, a lot of breaking stuff, and huge, huge hard slider. So guys that throw a really hard slider oftentimes start to develop what is needed for Tommy John surgery. It's the UCL ligament in your elbow. He threw a pitch in between his freshman and sophomore years, and he knew immediately. He's like, I felt it in my elbow, like something went wrong. He goes to a local doctor there, an orthopedic there, and the orthopedic says, here's what it is. It's a slight tear. You can rehab it. You can pitch on it, you know, at a later date. But there's
like that never works.
But there's exactly. His point was, he goes, there's a tear. And he goes, it's not, you know, it's not the worst tear I've ever seen, but there's a tear. This is going to need surgery at some point. Well, my brother went and got a second opinion through his team. They went and saw James Andrews. And James Andrews, you would think, is the be-all, end-all in terms of this type of thing. And Andrews said, nah, it's fine. You know, we'll rehab it. We'll do this. We won't do the surgery till we have to. Well, you know the end of the story, as you just pointed out. It's the same thing. Eventually, he did rehab it. He thought he was, you know, fine to an extent. Another slider, boom, pops. This time he needs Tommy John. Like, to me, this is what, like, when we saw what happened in that game, he didn't play for 40 days, guys. On Friday night, he didn't think he was physically healthy enough to go. And then all of a sudden today, or last night, like, he's good to go. Like, to me, I think they knew the risks. And I think they all said, we're pushing the chips in. We're going to try to do this. And I think Ryan also brought up a good point. It wasn't just the fact that he made the decision to play. It was the fact that he made the decision to play as Kevin Durant was accustomed to playing. It wasn't, Mark, you weren't here yesterday, but Connor and I were discussing what is Kevin Durant going to look like? Because if he is just, you know, play on the perimeter, 3-point, try to give some help on the defensive end, if he does that, then sure, maybe, but we all kind of figuring, like, if he goes all out and does exactly what he would do, we'd see exactly what happened last night. And to me, that's a big part of it. And so I tend to agree with you, like, especially when you knew it all was Kevin Durant was, I understand a player wants to play. Most players want to play. At a certain point, you have to ask the question, okay, who's the adult in the room? This guy's got another $160 to $200 million possibly coming his way. Are we going to risk that for this one game? Are we going to risk that for tonight? If he wants to do it and the finals aren't guaranteed, there has to be an adult in the room. And it didn't feel like there was an adult in the room last night.
Yeah. And I like I said to Ryan, I think I'm curious how normally you would think the type of win the Warriors got last night could turn the entire series.
It felt like a funeral.
I have a feeling Toronto's going to win game six.
For those that are curious, the Warriors are a three-point favorite currently in game six. The Raptors, basically the series odds have flipped. The Raptors are now a minus 310 favorite, and the Raptors are minus 10-3 favorite. The Warriors are plus 230. That's basically the opposite of what we saw at the beginning of the series.
Coming up next on The Six.
What does Penny want for that position that you're obviously so equipped to do?
Yeah, I mean, at this level, obviously, you've got to be able to do multiple things. So I think you saw my versatility as being a strength. But, you know, I've cut my teeth in the basketball world on helping guys get better and improve. And, you know, obviously with the talent that we have here right now.
The Six continues with that next on 92.9 FM ESPN. 92.9 presents the official Jason and John Memphis Draft Party on Thursday night, June 20th from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Join 92.9's Jason and John and watch the NBA Draft at our Draft Party at The Bluff on Highland with Grizzly Bear Blues, SB Nation, and Joe Mullinax, along with I Love Memphis's Holly Whitfield. The 2019 NBA Draft Party at The Bluff on Highland on Thursday night, June 20th with 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis's sports station.
Hi, I'm Brett Clark, operating partner of Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar. On Sunday, our $48 Sunday table features 7 ounces of sliced filet mignon over mashed potatoes with your choice of salad and dessert. On Monday, $55 gets you 8 ounces of buttery filet and delicate North Atlantic lobster tail with salad and dessert. And finally, on Tuesday, come in for Tomahawk Tuesday. That's 2 salads, 2 side items, 2 desserts, and a 35-ounce prime tomahawk ribeye to share for only $120. Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar. We use food and wine to create memorable times.
Hey, Mr. Landlord.
Honey, what are you doing?
I'm writing the landlord a letter.
Why?
Because the house is unsafe.
Unsafe?
Ever since Allied Termite and Pest showed up, the family's been all up in arms. I mean, literally. All their arms are up in the air.
Oh, my.
And look at Grandma. She's twerking over there. And last I checked, termites don't twerk.
Look at her go.
Allied Termite and Pest. Trained to solve your problems and bring you peace of mind. 24-hour in-home response guaranteed. Call Allied today. 901-754-0454.
Every time I drive, I see so many billboards for lawyers and law firms. And many don't even have a name, just a big phone number. And then in tiny words on the very bottom, they have the firm's name. And I always wonder, is their name small because they're a small firm? I'm John Morgan of Morgan & Morgan. When you're injured, you're usually fighting against the other side's insurance company. GEICO, Allstate, State Farm. These are big companies that want to pay you as little as possible. But our army of over 400 lawyers and 2,000 case staff, the largest personal injury law firm in the world, has a history and track record of going up against them and winning. When you're injured, size does matter. And you can now reach us by dialing Pound Law on your cell phone. That's pound 529. Pound Law, that's all. It's so easy to remember and even easier to get in touch with us. Morgan & Morgan, forthepeople.com.
The 4th Annual Redeemers Group Love Well 5K and Festival is coming up on Saturday, June 22nd at 9 a.m. at the beautiful Greenway along Humphreys Boulevard. This year, the June 22nd event benefits Serenity Recovery Center. There are so many ways that every one of us can love our city well. Run, walk, volunteer, donate, fundraise, or be a vendor. But the time is drawing near. Choose one way to love our city well this coming June 22nd. Go to lovewell5k.com and be sure to share the Love Well 5K and Festival event on Facebook. lovewell5k.com.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.375%, APR 4.65%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. Pay 2.13% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Attention, CDLA drivers. McLane in Memphis has immediate opportunities for Class A drivers. Average $70,000 annually with a $7,500 sign-on bonus, depending on experience. Drivers can count on generous benefits starting day one, along with a 4-day work week. Don't wait. To learn more, visit driveformcleanmemphis.com. That's driveformcleanmemphis.com. McLane Company is an equal opportunity employer.
Are you tired of standing in line to pay your bills? Advanced Financial offers free bill pay. You can pay your gas, electric, water, cable, phone, or any other bill at Advanced Financial, and we won't charge you a penny. And because Advance Financial is always open, you can pay your bills on your time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Visit one of our 24/7 locations for free bill pay today. Advance Financial, welcome.
The annual summer sale at James Davis has started just in time to get Dad's perfect gift in advance of Father's Day. This is Gary Parrish, and I've been telling you about James Davis for years. It's one of the best clothing stores in the United States of America. It's where I get my suits and my dress shirts for television work with CBS Sports. But understand this. They have so much more than just nice suits and dress shirts. For instance, right now, shorts, short-sleeve knit shirts, and sports shirts are 20% off. There's a summer selection of sport coats, suits, and blazers, all 25% off. And don't forget about the custom-made stance shirts. Those are the ones I buy because dress shirts off the rack are a thing of the past. Now, let me explain how this works. What you do is you go to James Davis. You walk in, you get three measurements, and in just 10 minutes, you're going to have a custom-made shirt ordered. It'll be ready in a matter of days. They start at only $98. It's a perfect shirt that'll fit you brilliantly, and it makes for a perfect gift, too. In fact, you can get a gift card to cover it. So where are you shopping in advance of these warm months that are on the way? James Davis in the Laurelwood Shopping Center. On the web, jamesdavisstore.com.
Let's up your life with Let's.
Experience the difference of a Spartan mower. Spartan not only looks amazing on and off the lawn, it's packed with standard features like GT Track for precision traction, balance, and control, with optional features like radial front tires and an all-new 360 floating seat for an incredibly comfortable ride. Take command of your yard. Take command of your time. Take command of your life by joining one of the fastest-growing mower companies in the world, Lads, for your zero-turn and golf car needs.
Lads. Up your life with Lads. Lads. Up your life.
Now, back to The Six with the Jason and John Show.
He is Cody Toppert, the newest University of Memphis basketball assistant coach. He's a graduate of Cornell, and he also has a real estate license. He joins us now. Coach Toppert, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. Yeah, welcome to Memphis. How's it been?
It's been wonderful. I mean, the people have been amazing, just kind of getting a good feel for the city. And I'm really excited to get started. So, I mean, it's just been an incredible atmosphere thus far and just excited for what the future holds.
When you step off the plane and you're in the city of Memphis, what is the first thing that you notice about it? Like, I'm just curious, from a, you know, an out-of-towner who now lives here, like, what's the first thing you notice about the city of Memphis?
Well, I'm coming from the desert, so I'm noticing a lot of green. I really see a lot of green. All the trees, man. It's a different deal. I'm used to just brown and cacti.
Well, just wait, the humidity. Wait until the humidity hits. Yeah. You'll feel right at home. So how did it evolve, you ending up at the University of Memphis? Just give us a little bit of background on how it all developed and how you're now on staff at Memphis.
Yeah, no, you know, this wasn't even on my radar. You know, I took a vacation with my wife and was literally heading back to my house to see my kids and got a call asking if I'd be interested in talking with Penny about a spot on his staff. And you know, definitely said I'd be interested in discussing that without question. And, you know, things kind of progressed from there. And, you know, a couple of days later, I was, you know, I was visiting and we were talking a little bit more in depth. And, you know, a few days after that, you know, it seemed like it was going to be the right decision. And you know, lucky enough for me that Penny thought I was the guy for the job as well. So it just kind of came together. Really, it was a perfect storm. Pretty cool to not really even have this on my radar and now be here, part of the program in the fold.
What did I'm curious. I'm sure you can't tell us everything, but in terms of the things that Penny told you wanted, what was that talk like? What does Penny want for that position that you're obviously so equipped to do?
Yeah, I mean, at this level, obviously, you've got to be able to do multiple things. So I think you saw my versatility as being a strength. But, you know, I've cut my teeth in the basketball world on helping guys get better and improve. And, you know, obviously with the talent that we have here right now, the opportunity is there, and bringing them together to be a cohesive unit is going to be important. But getting them better every day and working with them on the development aspect, I think, is something that Penny really liked. And you know, when you kind of look at it too, I think my G League background is interesting because you know, when you're coaching a G League team, you've got guys from all different walks of life, and the big joke is, what does the G League and prison have in common? And that is that everybody wants out, right? So. Because of that, you've got to take guys with all these individual agendas and kind of bring them together. So I've got experience kind of doing that in a short amount of time. And, you know, that's, I think those are the two things that, probably stood out.
Yeah. You were with the Suns most recently last season. And I think in terms of what Penny was trying to do, he told us on the show that he wanted another NBA type of guy who can help and develop. And I think that's obviously, you know, you fit that bill. What are the responsibilities? I mean, I know they're different in some ways, but are they in many ways the same in terms of what you were doing with the Suns and that carrying over to the Tigers now?
Yeah, I think, you know, me and Penny kind of see development the same way, and Mike and Tony, the whole staff, like, we kind of see it from the same perspective, right? So there's skills development, there's conceptual development, there's decision-making development. And so the way I see it with this incredibly talented group, you know, these guys are ready for that type of high-level player development for sure. And, you know, we've already kind of started doing it. We're two practices in, and I think the guys are picking up on it quick. We've got talented guys who are motivated and who, you know, obviously have that understanding of what this program is aspiring to be about, to the level that it's trying to get back to. You know, I think that they're bought in. So from that perspective, it's kind of the perfect storm as well, where we're already seeing some improvement from practice one to practice two, and we see development, how it kind of intertwines with what we're going to do offensively, how we're going to play, our style, and everything like that.
Coach, I got to ask you, how close attention, I mean, you're in the NBA, so I got to imagine it was limited, but how much did you know already about what was going on at Memphis in terms of who they were recruiting, that kind of thing, and how much of it when you get here is, holy cow, I mean, you're coming to a situation where they've got the number one recruiting class in the nation. I imagine that raises some eyes right there. Like, how much did you know beforehand already?
Yeah, well, you know, 82 games comes at you pretty fast. So during the NBA season, obviously, I'm locked in on all that type of stuff. You know, for every scout game, you know, I'm watching five of the opponent's game and really getting locked in on that. And so there wasn't a whole lot of time to really get an understanding of kind of what the landscape was and how the tide was turning, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so for me, I didn't really have a understanding or grasp until, you know, I was a day before I was about to come out here to visit with Penny. And so, you know, as I kind of did my research on it, I just continued to be more impressed and more impressed before I even stepped foot out here. And, you know, to be quite honest, this is the only college job that I would have taken. So, you know, this is, and it's a blessing to be here, and I'm really excited.
Well, I imagine, is it because of the facilities? Is it because of the unique opportunity sort of with the roster and, you know, how gifted it is? Is it a combination of all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with Penny. I think it starts with his vision. I think it starts with, you know, his love for the game of basketball, which definitely stood out to me. You know, the amount of thoughtful questions that he was asking me during the interview process to me showed that he really is taking great pride in selecting the type of pieces for his program that are going to make this thing really go. So I think for sure it starts at the top with him. There's no question. And then you kind of go down the list, right? So the infrastructure's here. The facilities are here. You know, if you're a basketball player, you know, you can get better by accident in this building, I'll tell you that much. And if you put in some serious time and some dedication, then you're going to see a tremendous acceleration and growth. And, you know, when you look at the third aspect of it, the players that are already here and the players that are coming in and what we have to work with, I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, that's really the trifecta right there. And you know, obviously we've got Tony Matlock, who I have a relationship with, you know, from my days coaching prep school. And then you've also got, you know, Mike Miller. And, you know, again, it's a great staff. And I think we've got an opportunity to do some great things. And so we just got to get in the gym and we got to work every day diligently to make sure that we're ready to play at our best when it matters most.
We are, of course, talking to new Memphis basketball assistant coach Cody Toppert here on Jason and John. You mentioned two practices in. I know that there are some things you probably would like to keep close to the vest, but from a general sense, how does the team look? I mean, obviously so many expectations for this group. What have you seen early on?
Well, I mean, we know we've got talent. We know we've got length, versatility, speed, athleticism, those types of qualities. I think an underrated aspect is kind of what I've noticed is feel for the game. So, you know, a lot of times when you get high-level athletes, you know, you get the kind of the bull in a china shop aspect of it, right, or the one speed, right, play fast, fast, fast. And the truly great players are able to understand when to slow down and how to have pace. And that's the one thing I've noticed about our guys is that their feel for the game, just two practices in, tells me that, you know, they obviously already have a solid foundation in what they're doing, and kind of their openness and willingness to learn has been great. Their eagerness to learn. So, those two things kind of just give you a solid platform to build on. And I think that's what we'll try to do daily.
Did you work with Joe Jackson back in the day, Coach?
I did. Yes. I had Joe Jackson when he was coming out of school preparing for the NBA draft.
How about him and how close he was, Coach? Because I remember that I was covering the Tigers for the newspaper here then. I remember him talking about going to Elevate, I want to say, back in the day, working with you, how much he was looking forward to it. How close was Joe? It's a conversation we've always had. He had the work ethic, didn't he, Coach?
I mean, yeah, that was Joe loved basketball. Yep. Joe had the physical traits. He had all those types of qualities. He had a killer instinct about him. Incredible athlete, a lot of good length. His career got off to a solid start. I mean, he had a great season in the G League with the Bakersfield Jam.
Yep.
And, summer leagues. And I think he was trending in the right direction. And, I think it's for a lot of guys, right, the difference between the guys who are in the G League or the guys who are just completely out of it altogether or the guys who make a roster, it's always a sliver, right? It's a sliver mm-hmm. of a difference between the guys who are not playing and sitting on the couch, the guys who are in the G League or high-level, European basketball, and it's a sliver between them and the guys who make the roster. It's a yep. sliver between the roster guys and those who get in the rotation. It's a sliver between those guys and starters. And then the way I look at it is then there's these star players, and they're just so much better than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So the gap doesn't get really significant until you're looking at the elite of the elite, the Kawhi Leonards, the Steph Currys, the James Hardens, yep. those types of guys. And everybody else is kind of just this bunch. And it's like you're missing one thing. Maybe it's IQ. Maybe it's discipline. Maybe it's discipline off the court. Those types of things. And for Joe, I think he left a little on the table because he had the talent for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Great guy, and I really enjoyed working with him.
How far does it go back? The first time that a guy that specializes in development like you gets a taste of it, sees it, right? Sees a guy improve because of the work you've done with him. The moment you knew, or maybe it was more obviously could be moments put together, but how young were you? When was it that you said, okay, this is something I'm good at and something I want to do? Do you remember?
Well, the funny thing is, right, the one thing you'll notice about me, right, we'll talk about things about all these different guys, the athleticism and length and this and that. I had none of those things. So, for me, the way I look at it, right, is a player has a maximum level of potential that they can reach,
okay.
right?
Yep.
And some guys, they leave something on the table, right? They're never able to really become the best player that they can be. Some guys get to that level, and some guys exceed that level. And the higher level your natural talent and athletic abilities and all that stuff is, right now you say you meet work ethic with extreme talent, you've got like the LeBron James level guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's just different levels to that. So for me, I probably exceeded what my talent level was, and that was through my work ethic.
Work.
I mean, when I was in Germany, I was taking other guys to the gym and, putting together workouts and kind of leading myself and some of my teammates through drills before
gotcha.
Practice, after practice, that type of stuff. But to be honest with you, my wife, Brittany, is the one who really pushed me and said, you have a talent for this, and you care about people and you want to help people get better. And so she's the one that kind of pressed me even more forward into this realm. And once I got a taste of helping kids out mm-hmm. At the prep school level and then, helping people realize their dreams of getting the NBA, change circumstances for them and their families. I mean, I just really just kind of got it. It was super rewarding, and I just loved it.
I'm with you. We are, of course, talking to Cody Topper, new University of Memphis basketball assistant coach here on the show. Now, as you know, Memphis has the number one recruiting class, Coach, and that means they expect to have the number one recruiting class every year for the rest of time. So recruiting is such a big part of the job. How do you view that side of it, as an assistant coach, the recruiting side of it? How do you view that responsibility?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, and this is true at any level of basketball, right? The players are the ones that are going to pull the train, right? So, if it's going to go far, right, you got to have some guys who are talented, and players win basketball games. Coaches try to help prepare them for those crunch time moments, and it's very important that we continue to build on the momentum that Penny has built here, and all the guys that him. Mike and Tony have brought in. And I think that what we do this year will obviously continue to help you know, help us sell the program. And I think on top of that, you know, it's the funny thing is there's this interesting kind of, you know, community of player development guys now. And so, you know, player development guys are, you know, the top players in the country now. They have all got player development trainers, skill trainers. And, you know, so I'm kind of intertwined in that community very well. I've got grassroots, you know, relationships as well that you know, the word wasn't out very long and people were already reaching out to me. So hopefully I can help continue the momentum and help continue to bring in talent.
All right, we've talked about your extensive resume here on this show. So we got to break it down. So I'm just looking on your website right now. You've got a Arizona Department of Real Estate license. Why do you have that?
Well, you know, it's one of those things, right? You don't know what you don't know, right? And then, you know, you just I have a desire to learn, right?
That's so an Ivy League thing.
You know, and I'm good. I don't know about all that because admissions can make a mistake, but I'll tell you this much, right? Right now I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to live and going through all that stuff. And the stuff that I learned at that class, right, I took the one-week boot camp, just got the license. I mean, the stuff that I learned at that class definitely has helped me in my real estate, you know, the aspect of that you know, especially when you're moving a lot. And I'm a professional mover, so.
Yeah, and then we're not done. Hold on, there's more. Through 2008 and 2009, you were a financial services associate at Prudential Financial in Arizona. Was there a point where you were just prepared, like, to not be in basketball if that was the way it went? That's how it looks to me. Is that how it was?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is, right, when you're a basketball player, your whole identity is associated with the game of basketball.
Yes.
Right. And at some point in time, every player, there's an expiration date on everybody's career.
Yeah, man.
Right. It's like your milk in your refrigerator. Right. There's a date. At some point in time, it's going sour. You're going to have to chuck it. Right. Mm-hmm. So some people are lucky enough to be able to extend their careers and push that expiration date back. I was one of those guys. But no matter what, when you're coming to the end of your career, you've got to start preparing for what's next. Yeah. Life after basketball. What is it going to be? And to me, you know, obviously there's no guarantees that you're going to have the opportunity to coach at a school like Memphis and be a part of this program, right? And so, you know, I think what I was definitely trying to do was, one, continue further my education that's going to help me, you know, with my financial, you know, my finances moving forward, whatever that is, stocks, bonds, whatever, all that type of stuff. Having a better understanding of it can only help me and my family. But then, two, you know, you don't know, right? Am I going to remain in basketball? There's always question marks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, wanting to is one thing and being able to is another thing.
Yeah, no, it's certainly interesting. Well, welcome to Memphis, Cody. We look forward to working with you. And, yeah, it's going to be fun. Should be fun, man. Appreciate the time,
Thank
as always.
Thank you for this, Coach.
Hey, my pleasure, fellas. Yeah, it's going to be a great ride, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
Yes, sir. He is Cody Toppert, new University of Memphis basketball assistant coach.
Don't miss the Jason and John Show tomorrow morning, beginning at 11 a.m. on 92.9 FM ESPN. 92.9 presents the official Jason and John Memphis Draft Party on Thursday night, June 20th, from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Join 92.9's Jason and John and watch the NBA Draft at our Draft Party at the Bluff on Highland with Grizzly Bear Blues, SB Nation, and Joe Mullinax, along with I Love Memphis's Holly Whitfield. The 2019 NBA Draft Party at the Bluff on Highland on Thursday night, June 20th, with 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis's sports station. Become a 92.9 FM ESPN Locker Room Club member now. Sign up on our homepage at 92.9ESPN.com. Memphis is home of the 2019 NBA Draft on Thursday, June 20th, on air at 92.9, on site at the Bluff on Highland, WMFS FM and HD1 Bartlett, WMFS Memphis, a radio.com sports station.
There was James Wiseman crumpling his 7'1" body into the front seat of a Corvette. What was crazy is when I tweeted the picture, how many, like, Kentucky fans and other fans would reply at NCAA, you should look into this. And it's like, James Wiseman didn't own that Corvette. He doesn't even have a driver's license.
That's even better.
Yeah. He's been, you know, too busy unicorning or whatever.
Mark Giannotto, Jeffrey Wright, Giannotto and Jeffrey. Weekdays from 2 till 4 p.m. 92.9 FM ESPN.
Spilled your red wine? Quick, the quicker picker-upper. Bounty picks up spills and messes quicker.
and is 2 times more absorbent than the leading ordinary brand, so you can get back on track quicker. Bounty, the quicker picker-upper.
At Indeed, we understand that when it comes to hiring, it's important to have a large talent pool to choose from. But sometimes too many good options can be overwhelming. That's why Indeed doesn't just give you access to a large pool of job seekers. We also offer screener tools that let you instantly narrow down your search. Hone in on hiring with Indeed. Experience Indeed for yourself today and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting at Indeed.com/promo. Terms and conditions apply.
Get your gun, Nelly, and saddle up Penelope as Western Trading Days at Sunrise Buick GMC. Old-time trading prices on over 800 new Buicks and GMCs, and the Sunrise Used Car Corral has over 150 in stock. Sunrise has rustled up a good-looking herd of cars and trucks under $99.95. Ranch managers have been told to cut prices to the bone. If you're a good person with bad credit, SunriseMemphis.com will help you get your brand on one of these little fillies. Free hot dogs and Cokes at the Chuck Wagon. Western Trading Days, 385 in Houston, Levy, and Collierville. Cars cost less at Sunrise, partner.
The 4th Annual Redeemers Group Love Well 5K and Festival is coming up on Saturday, June 22nd at 9 a.m. at the beautiful Greenway along Humphreys Boulevard. This year, the June 22nd event benefits Serenity Recovery Center. There are so many ways that every one of us can love our city well. Run, walk, volunteer, donate, fundraise, or be a vendor. But the time is drawing near. Choose one way to love our city well this coming June 22nd. Go to lovewell5k.com and be sure to share the Love Well 5K and Festival event on Facebook. lovewell5k.com.
When your dad tells you he doesn't want anything for Father's Day, he actually means it, perhaps because there's a good chance he doesn't even know it's Father's Day. But hopefully, he's raised you well enough to show some gratitude anyway, and now's a good time to recognize what he, or a stepdad, or a granddad, or a dad-to-be in your life means to you. So if you are, right now, shopping for Father's Day, it's coming up June 16th, by the way, make it count with some fresh, hand-cut steaks from Humphrey's Prime Cut Shop. We all know Folks Folly. It's the original Memphis Steakhouse. But did you also know that you could pick up those same steaks, as well as their crab legs, lamb chops, even a great-looking apron or steak knives? Everything you could possibly need for a fabulous Father's Day gift, you can get it all at Humphrey's Prime Cut Shop, which is right next door to Folks Folly. And if you want a gift for a dad who doesn't live in Memphis, no problem. Humphrey's can ship overnight anywhere in the country. So stop by Humphrey's Prime Cut Shop at 551 South Mendenhall or online at humphreysmemphis.com to get everything you need to grill like a legend.
Season tickets for the 2019 Memphis Tigers football season are on sale now and start at $100 when you buy 4 in the Family Fun Zone and $150 for end zone seats. The 6-game home schedule is highlighted with matchups against regional foe Ole Miss, plus AAC rivals Cincinnati and Navy. A season ticket includes the same great seat for all 6 home games, plus priority options to buy single game tickets, bowl tickets, and more. Be part of the incredible game day experience and get your seats today at GoTigersGo.com or call 901-678-2331. Stripe up.
Make Edwin Watts Golf the place to shop for dads and grads with their summer savings sale happening now. Get custom fit for free with the Cobra King F9 Speedback Driver, the ultimate formula for speed, making it the fastest and longest Cobra driver ever. And measure your distance with Bushnell GPS and rangefinders and save up to $70. Choose from the Phantom, the Hybrid, or the Tour V4 Shift. Edwin Watts Golf is your place to shop for the hottest golf gear this summer. Edwin Watts, home of the 90-day satisfaction guarantee.
I'm John Morgan of Morgan & Morgan. An accident takes seconds to occur. Then what should take a great deal of time and research sometimes only takes a day. What lawyer should I hire? Sometimes the firm you hire does many things: bankruptcy, immigration, criminal defense, right there on their website. Would you hire a pediatrician to do your heart surgery? Of course not. This will be a life-changing decision, and all lawyers are not the same, not even close. Our firm is an open book. You know us by over 30 years of reputation. If you want to know what a case like yours may be worth, visit ForThePeople.com and look at the offers made and verdicts returned by juries for cases like yours. Hundreds of them. The proof is in the pudding. Your lawyer may have never been to court, or rarely. And listen, just because you hired the wrong firm in a rush days after your accident doesn't mean you can't fire them before it's too late. Look before you leap. There is only one Morgan & Morgan. On your cell phone, dial #law, #529. Pound law, that's all.
I'm Sheldon Rosengarten with Mark Spensdorf Realtors, and I'm with Marty Fulton, formerly at Whispering Wood and Plantation Golf Courses and a PGA Life member. I often tell Marty that when I sell a home, it feels just like sinking a 10-foot putt.
Sheldon, since you never sink any 10-foot putts, you want to try another one.
How about when I sell a house in the first week and it feels like a 300-yard drive right down the middle of the fairway?
Well, it might feel like 300 yards, but that's two shots for you. You better try again.
How about when my strategic marketing program with the Shellbucks option, which draws buyers from every which way?
Now that is a hole-in-one. That's why people often say when you want the job done, call Sheldon.
Thanks, Marty. I can be reached at 682-1868 or memphisrelocate.com. That's 682-1868 or memphisrelocate.com. Do it now, and
go Tigers!
92.9 presents the official Jason and John Memphis Draft Party on Thursday night, June 20th, from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Join 92.9's Jason and John and watch the NBA Draft at our Draft Party at The Bluff on Highland with Grizzly Bear Blues, SB Nation, and Joe Mullinax, along with I Love Memphis's Holly Whitfield. The 2019 NBA Draft Party at The Bluff on Highland on Thursday night, June 20th, with 92.9.